I've been excited about this segment for a very long time. The new exhibit at the Fenimore Art Museum in Cooperstown, New York, is Tasha Tudor Around the Year, which illustrates the changing season and their special celebrations with over 100 outstanding examples of this beloved author and illustrator's original art for children's books and greeting cards. Evocative watercolors, delicate childhood drawings, original handwritten manuscripts, miniature doll cards, hand-decorated boxes and Easter eggs, and first-issue holiday cards are among the treasures to be enjoyed in this exhibit from the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, who put all this together. To tell us more, we welcome Michelle Murdoch, Director of Exhibitions, and Chris Rossi, Associate Curator of Exhibitions at the Fenimore Art Museum in Cooperstown, New York. Michelle, Chris, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
A delight. So let us begin with you, Chris, because with the last time you were with us, you teased that this was the next big event. How did this ultimately come to be?
Well, I think that we've been big Tasha fans for a while and thought she'd be such a great fit out at Fenimore, especially with the Farmers Museum across the way.
Right.
And we were fortunate to find that there was indeed a Tasha Tudor exhibit that had been compiled and was traveling and available for loan. So when the opportunity presented itself, we seized it, and we've been pleased to have the work with us.
Give us a sense of Tasha Tudor, Michelle, of how she became, how her career began. Did it start as an artist? Did it start as an illustrator? How did that begin?
She was interested in the fine arts since she was about 6 years old, actually. The earliest piece that we have in the exhibition was done when she was six. She grew up in an artistic household. Her mother was a portraitist, and when she left her home to be raised by some friends of the family, she pursued her interest in art on her own. She did go to school for only about a year, so she's mostly self-taught.
Mostly on the East Coast? Is that where
That's
she was
correct.
Primarily based?
Yep. She grew up in Connecticut, and she lived in New Hampshire and Vermont for her life.
So mostly New England
based.
When you look at the work, because it then becomes very much the work of an illustrator, correct?
That's correct. Yep. She wrote and illustrated several books of her own, and she also illustrated other stories.
Yep. And when did she really hit as far as the popularity goes?
I would say the 1940s.
Yeah. Yep. She put together her own first book and went out to try and find a publisher for it, sort of reminiscent of Beatrix Potter. Pumpkin Moonshine, which is good for this time of year, was a book that she...
Heavens, yes.
Oh, yeah. Nice little Halloween book. She illustrated and put together a dummy book. And like Beatrix Potter, she made it kid-sized, you know, so it's a smaller size book. And as you recall, she had a little trouble finding a publisher, but once she did, things really started to take off.
And that was the late 1930s.
And how would you, for people who do not know her work, how would you describe it to them over the radio? Because there certainly is a very folk art appeal to it, and yet it does come from a New England tradition and quite... Well, does it seem to have those British roots, doesn't it?
It does. You know, she would be the first one to say that she was influenced by Beatrix Potter or Kate Greenaway. So it beautiful, beautiful line drawings with watercolor washes that bring you back to what we like to think of as a simpler time. Tasha said that she lived a previous lifetime in the 1830s. And you can feel that in the paintings and the drawings and the illustrations. So I think people find them romantic, comforting, and evocative of a place that we'd like to be.
You know, it was fascinating to me because in the books and in the work, there is such a sense of calm, and there is this nostalgia and this beauty of this time. And living in Vermont, she lived not very far from where I live. And in her later years, shortly before her death, she would do a couple of events a year at the local bookstore. And I would go over there, and it was crazy. It was nuts. There's dogs running around. She was, you know, just very... I don't know, not frantic exactly, but just not certainly not focused, let's put it that way. And I guess that's sort of just how she was.
You know, I think if you come to the Farmers Museum and you go across the way and you see life on the farm, life on the farm, we have this romantic notion of the past that it was all like a beautiful watercolor painting. But if you've raised animals and you've kept a household and you've had to bring in the water, you realize it's all exciting and there's a heck of a lot going on. And it seems like maybe that was the real part of her life that we don't see through the illustrations, yeah. You know, for part of the crazy fun.
So it's the chicken's fault.
It's the chicken's fault.
No, it's the dog's.
It's the dog's fault. You get 14 corgis in a house, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah. Well, right. But there was sort of a, and I don't mean this to be derogatory in any sense, but there was very much a batty quality to it, I think. Which to me made it all the more charming,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. And I think it was E.B. White said something about part of the reason he did farming was because he found joy through complexity or complexity through joy, one or the other, but he was harking back to that sort of madcap life on the farm thing, and it sounds like Tasha had that going
on. Never a dull moment.
Yeah.
And she would be very focused in the work, but her production was really high, wasn't it? I mean, yeah. she did a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Not only over 90 books, but she also made three-dimensional objects for herself and for sale as well. She and her daughter Bethany actually had a little shop from their home where they would sell what they would call Mouse Mills catalogs. And what this was a way for them to sell doll clothing, doll bedding.
Yeah. Also, it's wonderful. The little books have drawings of ducks and crows, you know, modeling the materials that you could buy through the catalogs. They're wonderful.
In the exhibition, we have some Easter eggs that she painted and decorated. We have a doll's shirt that she made. We have advent calendars that she made. So she was creative with her hands, not only with flat art, but with three-dimensional things as well.
Yeah, I think her whole life was actually art. You know, everything she did, from the gardening down to taking care of the animals, to making the artwork itself.
So when you look at these catalogs, these little catalogs that she did of the Mouse Mills catalog for spring, these date back to when? The late 80s?
Yeah, I think they came out in the 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
So what's rabbit tobacco? Do we even know what the hell that is?
I don't think we can answer that on air.
It's probably clover.
Okay. Okay. So but this was for real. She was selling this stuff.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah,
she and her daughter. Yep.
Okay, back to my batty comment. But go ahead.
Well, you know, for you know, people love the lifestyle. But when asked, she said she was an illustrator. She was a working person, and even though this was a passion, she was supporting herself and supporting a lifestyle that she loved. So she was a good business person.
Absolutely, and it was very much a style, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I think it's a style that really seems to resonate with people. You know, we've been talking about this. She was back to the land before people were thinking back to the land. And it wasn't because she was part of a movement. It was what spoke to her and what she wanted to pursue. It was part of the life she imagined and she made real.
One of the things that is so amazing is here is a career, obviously, 1915 to 2008, but over seven, eight decades, she's working and producing.
Yeah.
And again, at quite a volume.
And successful.
Yes.
You know, once she gets recognized, she just keeps going and becomes one of the best loved names in children's illustration.
What is, when we talk about the exhibit itself of around the year, that's the theme?
Yes. Well, she has a book called Around the Year, and she has vignettes in it from the different seasons, but in the exhibit itself, we've got that book, but we also have Halloween material. We've got Valentine's Day material, Easter and Christmas. She really made a big to-do about the holidays, and it's reflected in her books and that scene in the exhibit.
And all different facets, from the work for the books to the Easter eggs to the cards to...
I think our favorites could be the advent calendars. She made these crazy elaborate advent calendars for home, and then some of them were later reproduced and sold. Her children would take turns deciding what the theme would be for the year, and that would be what she based the advent calendar on. And there are elaborate illustrations, you know, with the house and what's going on underneath the floorboards with the little mice and the corgis decorating the tree. And then I think my favorite in the exhibit is the Corgi Valentine, which is a giant Valentine, very intricate. You know, again, just made for at home with a little door that opens with Dr. Corgi in the middle, you know, writing out a love potion or something like that. It's fabulous.
I think one of the other interesting things about the exhibition is the chance for the visitor to see the process. The pieces in the exhibition, for example, we have the original illustration for 18 is 18 roses. In the book, you see the text on that illustration, but in the gallery, in the museum, all you see is what she illustrated. You don't see the text on it. So it allows the visitor to see the steps that were taken to get from the original artwork to the book. Likewise, with pencil drawings, she used a very old-fashioned transfer technique where she would draw the image on the front of the piece of paper, then rub the pencil on the back so that it looked like charcoal. Then she'd flip it back over and trace through the front to leave an impression on another piece of paper. So, again, the visitor gets to see that process in the gallery.
And that can be fascinating.
Yeah.
Or you know, in some cases, horrifying for a child. I remember when I was a kid, I went to, it was in Philadelphia, and they had a Beatrix Potter exhibit.
Yeah, okay.
And at the Philadelphia Library.
Yeah.
And we went down, and I was a huge, well, of course, Peter Rabbit was the big book, but I loved Jemima Puddle Duck. Mm-hmm. And little did I know that dear Beatrix went out and killed the duck.
Oh.
Brought it in, had it stuffed, and then would like play with it around, you know, yeah. as she painted. And the 9-year-old Joe was horrified by that.
I promise you, there are no dead animals in the exhibit. You don't have to worry.
All good news.
Yeah, it's good.
All very, very good news. When you look at the delicacy of the drawing,
yes.
it's beautiful.
And when you see it in person, too, it's amazing because you can see details that you can't see. The reproductions in books are good, but they're not as good as being there and seeing it in person. And the level of detail in some of the drawings, especially in the borders, the floral borders on the artwork, is exquisite. So it's great fun to be there in the gallery and get up close and see those.
It's like hide and seek.
Yes.
You walk around the gallery and you try to find the little hidden animals or the little hidden plants that show up repeatedly in all of these borders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When the exhibit came together, as I mentioned, through the Norman Rockwell Museum, who ultimately owns and catalogs her work? Does it have that level of sophistication that Rockwell had of people with such
the pieces?
You know,
yeah, the pieces that are in this exhibition are all privately owned, and the woman that owns them, Jeanette Nazek, she several years ago approached the Norman Rockwell Museum and the Alcott House about doing a retrospective of Tasha Tudor, and those two exhibitions were merged to become Around the Year. So because she passed away only in 2008, the majority of her works have not passed into public domain quite yet. There is a museum in Vermont run by her son Seth. It is a Tasha Tudor museum, but they're still just getting off the ground as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So the family still maintains ownership of
much of the work. Much of it.
And but again, there's so much of it. It's
really
incredible.
Very prolific.
There's a lot out there. Yeah.
Did she have because there were books that were Caldecott honors and so forth. I mean, did she have bestsellers in the sense where was there anything that was really huge for her? Or was it just sort of an overall body of work and style that people attracted to?
I think there was a great love for the body of work, but books like The Secret Garden apparently were very, very popular, her illustrations for that, Pumpkin Moonshine. And then I think once she got on the Corgi track, you know, the Corgiville Fair and Corgiville Christmas, those were very, very popular.
I think that's what she became known for. She started doing those books in the 70s.
And there's a picture of her with the corgis, and this is from Corgiville Fair, and she is leaning down and feeding one of the corgis, and there were a lot of them, but they were certainly well taken care of corgis, weren't they?
Oh my gosh, and Michelle was pointing out, I think that book's dedicated to 7 corgis. At one point she had 14 living with her, and you know, when you talked about pandemonium before, if you look at Corgiville Fair, that might be a good reflection of some of the pandemonium that went on at home with all those animals.
And there is just a beautiful quality to, again, back to the New England, but of the mountains in the background,
mm-hmm. yes.
And a beautiful quality to to her work. It is, it's just a neat, neat exhibit. I can't wait to see it. It's Tasha Tudor Around the Year. It is at the Fenimore Art Museum in Cooperstown through the end of the year. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, through December 31st.
It's December 31st. You can go to fenimoreartmuseum.org. Hello. You can go to fenimoreartmuseum.org. for more information and find out about the exhibit and, of course, all the great work done at the Fenimore. Michelle Murdoch is Director of Exhibitions. Chris Rossi is Associate Curator of Exhibitions at the Fenimore Art Museum. Michelle, Chris, thank you so much for being with us and have a wonderful time with us.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks so much.
Great pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.